And there were times when I cheated. I wrote down every time I cheated, like I always do.
No, I didn't. Not enough paper in the world.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory.
I'm great, probably not as well rested as you are, but I'm
actually taking like a super restful vacation like this is kind of exhausting. I came home, it's just like I'm still in go to bed at 8 o'clock mode.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Oh, because we started this recording at 9. Is that your problem?
That could be the problem. So when I doze off, don't take it personally.
Sure. No, I'll try not to.
So how have you been?
I've been very well, thank you. I have no complaints at all. I did just realize that we just passed the 2-year anniversary of when we played Zork 1 and had our first episode.
Oh, and here happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
I got you nothing.
I got you all sorts of opinions to share with you about Zork 3.
You have opinions.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. All right, so you are on vacation and I was not. And any other catch-up before we get to the mail?
No, I think that's it. Yeah. I just spent a week and a half or so down in sunny Central America, and I dug it. That's nice. Basically the recap.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we got a postcard, Carrington. You hear that?
What?
You hear this?
We got a postcard.
We have a physical piece of mail.
Wait, postcards exist?
I know. It's a thing.
Mail exists?
It does. It's a postcard from our friend Ken Gagne. And it is sent from Mammoth Cave National Park.
Oh.
And on the picture of it is pictures of stalactites and stalagmites and Booth's Amphitheater and the entrance to the national park. And I will read you the card. It says, "Hi, Kevin. Greetings from the original Colossal Cave. I took
That's a good opening.
Mm-hmm. I took some guided tours hereafter after attending workshops in nearby Nashville. I didn't see any adventure-related monuments or landmarks, but when asked, the tour guides were quite knowledgeable about Will Crowther. You and Carrington should record an episode of Eaten by a Gru here, Ken."
Actually, you record it there?
Yeah, I think so. We go into the caves, bring our portable mic, and
Caves could not be any more echoey than my minimalist condo. So honestly, I'm prepared.
All right, good.
I sit here in concrete and nothingness, just speaking to a microphone, hearing my voice echo all over. It can't be any worse than a cave.
Probably not. Yeah. Thank you for the postcard, Ken. That's lovely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like one of the reasons that Ken is cool is that he sends postcards when he goes places, and also sometimes like greeting cards and things. And
that's just one of the many reasons Ken is cool.
Yes. It's not a thing that most people do. Especially,
I thought you were going to say that's the thing most people don't know about Ken.
Well, I was going to say, especially people who are under 40, you know, or under 30, don't send postcards and greeting cards.
There are people under 30?
There are. There are people who were born in the 90s.
The gem in my palm started to blink a long time ago.
Well, it's time for you to go to Carousel.
What? I'm long past going to Carousel.
We also got email from people.
We got a few email from more modern people who type stuff.
Yeah, they did. The exciting one that I'm excited to talk about is
tell me the excited one you're excited about
is from Nathan, mm-hmm. a frequent friend of the show, and he said, "Love the Infidel episode, guys, and not just because Kevin gave me my new favorite quote, You're not allowed, you're, I think I said this to you, you're allowed to be wrong and disagree with Nathan. he says, I was sitting in an auditorium waiting for a show to start when I heard that, and everyone stared at me when I burst out laughing. I plan to use that frequently with my wife.
Oh, I'm sure that'll go over very well. Yeah. Especially if he's using it, because he'll be talking about himself in the third person. Sure. So that'll go over particularly well.
That's double annoying. Sure. I had asked about automatically counting ways to die in an Infocom game.
Oh, yeah. I remember. I was talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Nathan dug into this. He said, using a disassembler, that's both easy and hard. Once you determine which routine is the death routine, which is called jigs up, that's what they generally call the routine that would let them print out a custom death message and ask you to restore, restart, or quit. It's straightforward to count calls to that routine in the code. So, for example, Infidel has 40. That's the same number given in the New York Times, so maybe they just counted calls to jigs up in the source code. It's not as simple as that, however. Frequently, the same cause of death with the same message is used in different parts of the code. For example, there are four different places in where Infidel tells you you're plunging to your death from the steep staircase. Also, the same routine call may be reached from multiple paths that seem like distinct deaths to the player. In Cutthroats, for example, there are many ways for the mind to go boom. A few games don't use a general jigs-up routine, so they're not so easy to scan. Arthur and Sherlock don't, presumably because Bob Bates wrote them outside of Infocom in his own coding style. Deadline, Suspect, and Witness don't either, but they only have 3, 0, and 2 ways for you to die. Moonmyth, Sea Stalker, and Wishbringer also don't, as kids' games with no player deaths. So with these disclaimers, here are the counts of jigs-up calls in the other games. And he said there may be slight variations between releases, and he sent a list, which I've added to our little spreadsheet online. For instance, though, Ballyhoo has 15 ways to die, Beyond Zork has 24, Border Zone has 67. The one with the most was Shogun, which we haven't played yet, which has 96 ways to die that we can look forward
goodness.
To.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
So do you remember which one had the fewest? I mean, I guess the kids' game had
fewest. Yeah, several of them had zero. But... Right, and Suspended has 6, which are robot deaths.
Right.
So, which don't even end the game. Sometimes it just kills the robot. So, and he said, while scanning Zork Zero, I was reminded of one of my favorite bugs in it. There's a stupid action you can take that makes the game say you die a horrible death, but you don't. Nothing happens to you. They just accidentally printed out the message instead of calling jigs up.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So that was great. And I really appreciate having that data, Nathan. Thank you. And we will be able to talk about that going forward as we talk about the stats for the games.
I like that they call it a jigs up message. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Well named. You know, it's unsurprising that the Infocom people came up with a good name for it. But I like it.
True.
If I remember, we also got, let me find it. I got email from... here it is, from Dan, saying, hey guys, just wanted to say thanks for the outstanding podcast. I grew up on Infocom games in the 80s, back in the day. I finished some of them, but failed to finish many others. However, I always had a fun time on my own or with friends. I listened to your Enchanter episode, but only up to the spoiler fence. Feeling nostalgic, I decided to play Enchanter for the first time in decades. I quickly realized I remembered almost nothing about the game. So I settled in with Frotz 8 and Enchanter on one monitor and Trizbot on the other, an excellent free mapping software for Windows. So good tip on that. It took me a few weeks, but I finally finished the game without ever looking for hints online. I suspect some of my success was due to long dormant neurons firing in my brain, giving
those
me the...
Those are the best neurons.
Those are my only neurons. give me the nudge I needed to press forward, but a win is a win. He's correct on
nice.
That. In any event, I just fired up the podcast episode again, this time past the infamous spoiler fence. Looking forward to what you guys have to say about the game. In my book, it was excellent. Maybe I'll play it again sometime when I am in a retirement home and my mind is beginning to fade. Everything old will be new again. Again, thanks for this trip down memory lane. That's awesome. I love that kind of email.
Very nice. We have another nice email from Paul Code, who said, Dear criminals and kleptomaniacs, was really happy to see, to hear this episode up to the spoiler fence. I think he's talking about Infidel. He said, Infidel was my first Infocom game. I actually paid for it even. After high school, I bought an Atari 800 XL, a 1050 drive, and the folio version of Infidel. I didn't finish it, but it was really enjoyable and much better than others seem to think. The game and its packaging hold a special place in my heart.
I love the packaging for Infocom games, and I wonder if it's in part because I'm pretty sure I never bought one back in the day. I've purchased them subsequently, like basically used ones off eBay and such. And I've had listeners give me them. I've just stumbled across them. Like I've come into, and I currently have some original packaging ones, but I'm pretty sure back when they were new releases, I never once paid for one. I paid for very few games. I was really part of the problem.
Sure. You still are, sir.
I still am a big part of the problem. Someday I will just be the problem.
I paid for Hitchhiker's Guide, and I...
And then you got one for winning that contest,
yes,
right?
Yes, I got one for free, and Mind Forever Voyaging, by winning a contest, and yeah, I pirated the rest of them.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's like a 95% Carrington rate.
I'm striving for 100% Carrington, but...
never go 100% Carrington.
I think that's all the mail. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, that's good enough.
Okay.
This show's about us, not them.
That's right.
It also could be that I literally came back in my place like half an hour ago or so from another country, so I don't know. I don't remember what we got. I played this game a while ago.
Well, I just finished it, yesterday. I forced myself to finish it in time because we were scheduled to record today, and...
So, and because you're about to go away, right?
It's fresh in my mind. Yeah, I'm headed out of town tomorrow.
Yeah, so we basically have this little window when I'm back and you're still here for us to record. So today is the day.
Yeah, and I really wanted another game to play for my long plane trip tomorrow. So we'll talk about
it. So what is your setup for playing on a plane?
I use Zoom on my Mac.
And what about for cheating?
Traditionally... I don't cheat when I'm on a plane because Resonant.org was my cheat source. But Resonant.org's cheats are now gone. So I basically now have switched for this game to they're called Prism. Someone years ago took InviziClues and turned them into Z files. So you can play them in your Zoom or your Infocom Z Machine player. So basically, it's a menu system that has all the same clues, InviziClues, in the same sort of you can read them one at a time situation. So you don't get more than you need. So that's part of what I did for this game, and that's probably what I'll do for whatever game we play next. It's a pretty awesome way to go if you can't get them online, and it will allow if I download the thing ahead of time, I can cheat on a plane. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. So my playing of this game was interesting. How did you play it? Did you use your Apple or how?
I used my Apple, but I played it using Pitch Dark.
Hmm.
Pitch Black? Pitch Dark?
Pitch Dark.
I love this thing so much you think I could remember its name. Oh, I really am part of so many problems. Pitch Dark, which was great. It is an amazing way to play these games. It just gave me everything I wanted. I loved it. Really, really, really great way to play.
That's a Mac program? We talked about it before, right?
No, it's the Apple II.
I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm completely befuddled.
Yeah, the 4 a.m. and
it's
Cucumber
a 4 a.m.
put together.
Cucumber yeah. magic thing, yes.
It's great. It is because it gave me like everything I wanted from playing with the vintage experience. Like I'm playing on an actual Apple II. So that was great. But with all the little modern bits you want to have, like it's just easier access to the game and hint stuff and mostly just the saves and just it was terrific. Like it was kind of the best of both worlds. I really liked it. I think it's going to be my go-to way to play going forward. Even if I have an original disc, I would prefer to play, you know, just use the original box, but play this way instead of you play the original disc, and I'm always a little worried it's going to cack out on me halfway through a game.
Sure. Yeah. I played it in an interesting... Well, first of all, months ago, a friend sent me a cartridge of Zork 1, 2, and 3 for the Atari 8-bit computer. My plan was to play Zork 3 on the Atari 8-bit, and that did not work out. I did not use the wonderful cartridge. I started I was just on in a laptop situation, and so I started using Encrusted, which we've talked about before, which mm-hmm. is the online Zine Machine interpreter that I like a lot that has auto mapping. So I was using Encrusted and like mapped most of the game, and then I got to a puzzle that requires a monospace font, and Encrusted doesn't do a monospace font, and I realized I can't use Encrusted in order to play this game anymore. So I gave up on Encrusted and switched to Zoom, and then just replayed in Zoom. But Encrusted had created a beautiful and useful map of basically the entire world at that point. So I was using Zoom in one window to actually play the game while switching back to the Encrusted window to enjoy its map.
Oh, nice. Well, that's
was
good enough.
It was all right. It was a little weird. But then I had a second Zoom window after a while, which had my InvisiClues on it. So it was a lot going on. It was a lot happening there. So basically I played in Zoom, and I submitted a bug report to Encrusted, but I think
you're so much better at me than at finding bugs.
Yeah, lucky me.
And I have a massive ego, so you think anytime I encounter any problem in the game, up to and including me dying, I would submit it as a bug. I mean, well, clearly this is wrong. And yet I don't. It's odd.
I stumbled upon one actual bug in Zork 3, but I was excited about it, and then it turns out it was not a new bug. It was it was already in the bugs list. So
maybe found it though.
So I did. Yeah.
It's better than I do. I never seem to find these bugs.
That was eating bread, and then the bread didn't actually disappear when after.
Oh, I found a bug in Costa Rica though.
Oh yeah,
yeah, we're down there. Well, actually, technically, Rachel found it. She closed the little sliding door to the bathroom in the second place we were staying, and there was a bug like the size of her head—a spider, biggest spider I have ever seen. So the screams brought me over. I was like, "Were you just axe murdered?" What was this? And I was like, "That's a very large spider." It was big.
Technically,
and now it's dead.
Technically, it's not a bug.
Technically, it's not a thing anymore because I smushed it with a towel.
Killed it.
It's like a very wadded up towel.
So brave.
Yeah, so I had to steel myself for quite a while going, okay, I get one shot before I have...
It's going to fight back.
Please don't let me miss.
You sent it to Carousel.
Yeah, I did indeed. Well, I sent it to the toilet, but yes.
Well, it's a carousel of water.
It does spin, so yes.
All right, so we played on our different systems, and we did the game. And let's talk about things about the game. Zork 3, The Dungeon Master, that's a complete name, was released in September 1982 in the fantasy category. It's
credited. Which is super early.
Sorry? Super early.
Which is super early. And for those people who either attended or watched our presentation about the kind of the rise and fall of Infocom, you'll know it's that early stage where like they're firing on all cylinders. And for the next couple of years, it's just going to be up, 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 success after success. Mm-hmm. So like they're doing great. This is going to be what, their fourth or fifth game, I guess.
I believe so.
So it's really super early. And it's kind of in that point where they can, in a sense, do no wrong. Every game's getting supposedly better than other games. Their parser is kicking everybody's butt, and they're just having massive successes. And then this is the third in a series. One thing I didn't know about this game, I guess I still don't know, maybe you do, was Zork always planned to be a trilogy? Because there's things in this game that hint at more Zorknesses, like a Zork 4.
Right, so it was not. According to the Digital Antiquarian, which I read their super useful article.
Okay, this time I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, well, this time I did.
Last time I went to try to peek at it, yeah.
They weren't sure, I think, and it could have been a six-part thing or, you know, any number. But then they decided later, I mean, Enchanter was supposed to be Zork 4, and then they decided
that's where we talked about it. Knew there was a this came before Enchanter. Right. Okay.
Right. So that ended up being its own series.
Because there's
there's
a bit in this game that's kind of like a thing that's past the spoiler point, but like there's an Enchanter bit, and I keep going like, where have I seen this? Where have I seen this? It was Enchanter. It's all coming back to me.
I like that part. Yeah, there's a part where there's a couple of parts in this game where you're playing other games.
Which is super cool.
Yeah, I liked it. And it's credited to Mark Blank and Dave Liebling. Now, we had also talked before, Carrington, about we were both like, was Zork 3 originally part of the PDP-10 version of Zork, or was, you know, we were not really sure. And I looked it up.
There's a lot of things we don't know.
Don't listen to us.
Definitely not.
So most of Zork 3 is new, was unique, and were not originally in the PDP version, except for a couple of the puzzles that didn't fit in Zork 1, and they kind of held them off or thought it was too much or whatever, and then they were too good, so they held them and put them into Zork 3.
Okay. Yeah. But it wasn't the case, I guess, I've read some reviews of Zork 3 now, so I guess it's the case that these puzzles, though, weren't necessarily completely the end game of like the original Zork or dungeon or whatever. It's not that like these were necessarily like the last three things you did in the original one. It's like one of these puzzles, I guess, is actually an early one from the mainframe thing, but just now positioned in this third game.
Yeah, one of them was definitely like in what we would think of the Zork 1 area that
Because
it wasn't really the end game puzzles, but a lot of the end text, like the very last thing you see when you win the game, is actually from the PDP version. They did add some, they added a paragraph at the end, but a lot of that is kind of true to the original ending of the game.
That's interesting because I mean, we'll get to it later a bit, but there's not really a plot here, but there's like an overarching thing that's happening with this whole Dungeon Master that differentiates it really from the earlier games. And it felt to me like that was added here and wasn't really part of the earlier games. It wasn't that, oh, we're continuing an ongoing story. Mm-hmm. It was that here's a new thing. So it's interesting that ending is very much wrapped up with this whole Dungeon Master thing. I mean, that's why this is Zork 3, the Dungeon Master.
Yeah.
So it's weird that the original game had that ending then. I wonder if there was more of the Dungeon Master stuff through. I guess eventually I'm going to have to sit down and play the. It's going to be a long time before I do this, but eventually sit down and play the whole congruent thing.
That sounds exhausting.
It does sound really exhausting. Maybe now that I know a lot of the puzzles, it'll be
easier. This does feel like a very different game than Zork 1 and 2.
Totally. It's
style
very different.
Is different. Yeah. I mean, this is a dark game, especially compared to Zork 2, which was a lot.
Yeah, Zork 2,
lighter.
I remember being funny. Yeah. I mean, it's a while ago, so I think it was like a year ago we played it, but I remember Zork 2 as being pretty funny, and this one really isn't. There's a bit of humor in it, but it's kind of more melancholy.
It's brooding. It's gray. Yeah. Yeah,
and it's weird to say that, but it's because it's the atmosphere of it. It's because it's kind of taking place in this awareness of the lost empire, and so it's taking place in this thing where all these descriptions of this kind of loss just has to do with the whole atmosphere. So yeah, brooding is a good word for it, actually.
Let's see. Let's talk about the box. It says Zork 3. It's got the kind of typical brick spelling out Zork 3. That is
That's a great logo. Still one of the all-time great logos.
Oh, it is. It really is. It says it all comes down to this. And if you read the back of the box, it says, an old, oddly youthful man turns toward you slowly. His long silver hair dances about him as a fresh breeze blows. You have reached the final test, my friend. You are proved clever and powerful. But this is not yet enough. Seek me when you feel yourself worthy. Zork 3, the Dungeon Master draws you into the deepest and most mysterious reaches of the great underground empire. Nothing is as it seems, and the one responsible for the shadow and darkness, the Dungeon Master, embodies the greatest mystery of all. In this test of wisdom and courage, you will face countless dangers, but what awaits you at the culmination of your odyssey is well worth risking all. That's how they describe it.
What's interesting about that then is when it says you've reached the final test and saying it all comes down to this, those are clearly denoting the last of a series of games. No, like wishy-washy, maybe it's going to go on.
You're right. But you know, but it wasn't the last. They had Zork 0 and then they had Zork the Undiscovered Underground, and
but at least, I mean, at this point in publishing you would think like this is clear. Now sometimes people say that anyway because they want to say, oh, you'll definitely spend the money, this will wrap things up, and right. Like, ah, suckers, there's gonna be a fourth. But just it's interesting. It all comes down to this. Kind of clearly says, like, okay, yeah. just one more time. I know these are really difficult, but steel yourself for just one more.
They could have pulled a Douglas Adams, and oh, here's the fourth in the trilogy, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So did you have the physical materials?
Yes, I've got the gray box.
Yeah.
So the one that's all, and so in it. It's got in the Browsy, it's the Firbaz Co. International Annual Report, and so it's kind of it's funny. I didn't like it as much as other Browsies. It's got like the stuff about the cave and stuff about the tweezers company and this, but like it's basically just this international report, and it's skinny. Like it's like 5 pages. It's really small. It's a whole financial report. It mentions in the report like a bunch of years. So like it's. This is the financial report for year ending 778. Mm-hmm. So it compares it to 777, and it talks about different things being built in different things. And those years come up like this, like is often the case. The Browsy gives you hints about things you might need to know when you play the game.
I didn't feel like I had to know anything in there. Nah, I mean, yes, the years are mentioned, but I figured out the year thing other ways.
Those years are also mentioned, or at least the one of them is mentioned in the game itself.
Right.
And inside, I don't know if mine is complete, but I have the disc, which I didn't use because I played using Magic Modern stuff.
Sure.
It has a card here, which I'm trying to open up. I cannot open up. Here we go. I have now opened it up, which is just a shareholder letter. So, dear shareholder, it's been another banner year, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're doing awesome. It's got a stock certificate. So I have a Firbazco International stock certificate saying that this certifies that somebody, though I haven't filled out my name, is the owner of 100 shares of fully paid and non-assessable uncommon stock on the par value of 1 Zorkmid per share. So go me, I'm a Zorkinair. And it's got the little Apple II reference card. Like that's the one card that gets thrown in that's different for depending on what computer you're in. So if you're Commodore 64 or whatever, you get a different version. But this is the one saying, here's how to play it on an Apple II.
Boom.
And say two. That's it. So I don't know if there were supposed to be other things, but that's all I got in this box.
Yeah, there was the annual report, the stock certificate, and the letter from the chairman of the board. Do you have that?
That's the letter, the shareholder letter thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I didn't think they were good.
But that's it. Like,
not
these
interesting.
Are
there was no there's no stuff. There was no magic glowing rock or peril sensitive sunglasses or it was just a few pieces of paper and none of them really relevant to the game.
It's funny. I meant to when I went through the box and I started playing, I remember thinking, I wonder if my feelies are incomplete. I'll go online later and look to see what I'm missing. And then I just forgot about it because I didn't really need any of that to play the game. And I just never got stuck such that I started thinking, oh, maybe I'm missing a feely. But I guess I'm not. They're just fairly light on the feelies.
Yeah. Agreed.
You can be wrong and agree with Carrington. So the first thing I did, my very first move in this game, well, technically it didn't even count as a move. So my very zeroth move was to type the word score. First thing I did, just to kind of see what I'm up against. I don't know. I don't always do it that way, but okay. So prop comes up. I type score. It says your potential, which is a little interesting, potential rather than score. Your potential is 0 out of a possible 7 in 0 moves. So 2 interesting things there. One, it's that is not a score, it's a potential. And it was only out of 7. I'm like, there's only going to be 7 points here. Like, we'd already established from the earlier Zork games. You get used to going for like 100 points or 200 points, like
right.
Big points in these games. And this is an early game. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, nope, we're going to do it at a 7.
Which is one of the ways that I felt this game was jarringly different from Zork 1 and 2.
There's a few ways. Yeah.
I mean, one, we'd already talked about the mood of the game, and then this scoring thing where you don't really have a score, you have a potential, and this is not a giveaway because I think this is in the documentation. It's possible to have all 7 points of potential and still not be anywhere near finishing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And
I had 7 points before I was done. Like I was still playing, and I had the seven potentials.
It was weird.
It also seemed weird that sometimes it kind of feels in this game, like every once in a while I'd realize I'd have a point, but I hadn't really accomplished anything. It's kind of like you don't get your points for solving puzzles. It's more like you get your points for discovering the existence of a puzzle.
Yes, like, exactly.
You have found
exactly
this room. Have a point. Now, maybe you can do something interesting here, but you have the point anyway. It weirdly kind of undercuts a lot of things from earlier games. It undercuts the humor, undercuts the scoring, it undercuts the reason for doing things.
Right.
It undercuts the whole idea of collecting a bunch of treasures and doing stuff with it. It undercuts your way you react with other people. Like often in an adventure game, like you come across a thief or you come across somebody and what you do is you pick up your sword and you kill them. And this really is aware of the nature of the game. It's not really postmodern, but it's oddly like, it's like Mark Blank and Dave Liebing sat down and like, they know these games, you know these games. They say like, we both know why we're here. You're not really into the mazes, you're into the puzzles. We want to do the puzzles, you want to play the puzzles. Let's just put some puzzles. Like, just like the story, it's oddly aware of like the reader or the player game maker relationship.
See,
and it's kind of in it.
And I think it's fine to do that, and that can make an interesting game. But you don't do that as the third entry in a series. You need continuity.
I thought so too.
It's like, you wouldn't go to a movie, I don't know, Kill Bill number one and see it, and then go to Kill Bill part two and have it be a completely different movie that breaks the fourth wall and, you know, and is shot in a different style. It's just like,
yeah,
you don't do that within a series. You know.
But at the same time, I kind of get it. Like it's like, they say, okay, we're going again, and they're trying to do something different. Like, you're trying to up the ante, I guess, in a sense. And instead of making it, okay, we're going to have 1,000 points, you know what, we're going to do 7. Like, they're trying to shake things up a bit, I guess, and not make the exact same game again. But that's kind of weird when what you're doing is putting out in 3 pieces an existing single game. Like, so it seemed weirdly disjointed that way. But if these were all supposed to have come out of the same original game, that's why I said, like, why is there this whole Dungeon Master thing now? And it also seems really melancholy, and it's just very weirdly aware of the fact, in a weird sort of way, the fact that this game, it doesn't come out and say, okay, you're in a game, but it does seem aware of that. Like, it will expect, like, when you do the thing that would be expected, like you try to kill a person or you do a thing, it won't work, or it'll have unexpected results in a way that makes you kind of aware they knew you would do that, and so they said, no, we're trying to make you approach things differently, and it's a little strange. I liked it. It was refreshing that way, but it was also kind of weird. It had this sense of, like, it's almost like they were kind of already bored of doing it the normal way. And as if you would, like, okay, well, this is game 20 or game, we've been doing these things for decades, we gotta, like, everyone's kind of bored of the original. Like, I've been doing it for 2 years, man.
It's
like, so it was weird. Oh, the empire has crumbled and we're also bored of the original stuff. I'm like, already? Right. Kind of strange. Which isn't necessarily a negative thing. I just found it a little odd.
Yeah, I thought it was odd. I thought it was out of place. It was, I think it was kind of a negative thing. I mean, I don't know. It was just the wrong time and place to do this, I think.
Yeah, I liked it. The reviews in general, at least from the modern reviews I've read, are glowing about this game. Oh my goodness, do people like this game. And one of the things that a lot of reviewers echo, so I don't know if it came from, like, one source and everybody's just agreeing, or this is just, like, everybody's take on this game, is that they love how this game is hard, which isn't to say, like, they love that the game is hard. I mean, literally, they love the way in which this game is hard, because everybody seems to say what they love about it is it's not, like, hard for the same old janky ways. Like, it's right. Not because of a maze. It's not because right. of things like running out of food or water or some sort of timer. And it's not because of, like, an unfair element in the game design. Mm-hmm. But weirdly, I would argue there is a maze, there is a timer, and there is cheating by the game designer. So I disagree with all three of those things. But at the same time, I also liked the way it was hard, and I liked the nature of the puzzles, although it's kind of weird that there's, like, basically 5 puzzles in this game.
Yes, not a lot of puzzles. Yeah,
not a lot of puzzles, but great atmosphere. And I also liked the way it was hard, and I liked the kind of maze you get here versus the twisty passages, impossible to map it maze. And so right. I kind of agree with those, but I thought it was weird that those 3 specific points I think are specifically incorrect, like factually wrong.
It is hard.
Well put.
It
well
is
put, my friend.
Hard. It's a hard game, and I cheated a lot.
Well, I would agree with both of those, hard and lots of cheating at this end too. Yeah.
But there were times when I was just like, I next to my cheat note, I went like, really or seriously? And a couple of times it's like, I never would have gotten that. I'm glad I cheated because it seemed bordering on unfair to me. But super hard game.
There's only one thing that I thought was unfair. I read a solution to a puzzle, and it was so different than the way I was approaching it. And then I later in playing was able to solve the puzzle the way I was approaching it. Like, so the way that everybody says to do a thing is completely different than the way I did one of the puzzles.
I look forward There's to this talking puzzle with these that.
Guardians. Oh. So I want to talk about that because yeah. I did it one way right. that is self-contained, one. But you're supposed to do it with this other thing that I think is basically like an Easter egg. Like, how would anybody know to do that? It's kind of bizarre. But at the same time, like, there's also a lot of learning by death, man, which I don't like that. There's a bunch of things which you know to do because you fail. And a bunch of times where I walked around with nothing to do. Like, I just walked around from room to room, like, what am I supposed to do now? I just, like, there was a time when I had all 7 points. And I was like, still don't know what to do. Okay, I've technically won. And I even started thinking, are they, because it's such a subversive game in these weird ways. I thought, is that what's going to happen? Is it that you get your 7 potentials and you just walk around and ha ha ha, the ending is just the game never ends? Because I really started thinking, like, maybe that's the case. It's just, it's funny that you'll eventually give up. And I was like, that's not going to be that funny, man.
No.
But there's a few times where I just ran out of things to do. One, because there's a thing that can happen in this game that will make the game, a couple things that will make the game unwinnable. And you won't necessarily know that has happened.
Really?
You get to a certain, there's a certain place where you can't get to part of this after a certain point. And I didn't realize that. And I was taking my time I had to restart.
Make a note to talk about that after spoiler fans. Yeah. Cause I think I managed to do it. I had another puzzle that I think I did in the not usual way. It was ended up being way easier and I ended up not seeing a couple of rooms because of it.
Anyway, we'll talk about that. I've definitely got very specific things I want to talk about after the spoiler fence.
I made a note that there were several time-based things in the game that I did not really like. At some point, you can't get to a certain place, and then an event happens. And then you can get to that place. And it's just...
But after that same event, you can't get to other places.
So you have to...
So you probably have already used those other places, right? And maybe. I was taking my time.
I think I did, actually. I think I managed to do it out of order. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, I did it. Yeah, and sometimes it seemed like... There was another time where an event happens. And there's a cause and effect where you do something and it causes an event... You get enough points or something, and it causes something to happen. But there's no clue that happens. So you just basically might have to walk around the entire map just going dum-de-dum-de-dum with your thumb in your butt trying to figure out.
There are other ways to play,
But that's how I prefer to play. Looking around for what's changed and what's new. And I don't like that. There was a way to continue. But because something had shown up that wasn't there before. But
well, for me, it was weirdly kind of the opposite. So because I was taking so long, by the time I would get to a certain area, the event had happened. So it lets you get to new areas, like a passage kind of opens up. So that passage was always opened up. But then I couldn't get to it. So when I started again like 3 or 4 times. And so finally I was getting to know, because there's not that many puzzles, it's pretty easy to, you can blow through this game once you know all the puzzles. And so I would get to that area quicker. And then I got there one time and I'm like, oh, where'd the passage go? Because I didn't realize it was opening up because of a certain event. And I got there before that event and suddenly the passage was just gone. I'm like, well, what if I screwed up now, man? Like, why is that not there? I wasn't kind of understanding how the world was changing. It took me a while. But there was a bunch of times where I just dum-de-dum-de round, but with my thumbs well away from the rest of me, but in all other ways, just like you, just with nothing to do. And then suddenly there would, like, something would present itself.
Right.
And then there was a particular puzzle I got stuck on for literally days. Mm-hmm. It's like a 5-day puzzle for me that was really rewarding when I finally solved it. So there's a couple things here that I thought were just brilliant, beautiful puzzles that I want to talk about. Then one that took me days, it probably shouldn't have taken me days to solve, but I'm really glad I didn't cheat on that one. And it was incredibly rewarding when it got solved. And so that was great. There's some real rewarding stuff here.
I rewarded myself at any point during this game. I think I might've had to cheat at least a little bit on every single thing.
I cheated on most of it.
There was one puzzle that I really liked. I thought it was just a really well-designed, fun puzzle that was just like right in my wheelhouse.
Was it to do with moving things or was it to do with time?
Time.
Okay, yeah, that's the puzzle I solved without cheating.
Good for you.
Yeah, no, and it was hard and took notes and a lot of trial and error. Really, and it was lovely.
I really tried to do that one on my own, and I couldn't. In fact, there were two different ways that I did not figure it out. I mean, it's not just like, I didn't miss that one thing. It was like, nope, there was two different.
You know? I think that's why there were two periods in which I was stuck for literal days. Mm. So I bet you it's those same two things. Anyway, we'll talk about it later. But sure. I love that puzzle.
I liked the fact
that there was those hints, like you had said, like there's parts of this game where you can literally enter other games. And that's really cool. Like there's some really neat ideas here for something that's coming so early on in Infocom. That's really neat. Like they're just like really thinking of new stuff. Well, at the same time, this is the same dude who made Deadline right before this, which really pushes the parser and really changes the way you interact with the game. Yeah. But this goes back to the original one, I guess, because it's the third in the Zork series, so you can only change so much. But instead of pushing like Infocomness forward into new areas of the way the parser would work, it's pushing it in like with time travel type stuff or entering other games or like other sorts of things. So those kind of flashes of brilliance are here just put into the puzzles. And I really dug that part of it.
Me too. And I really enjoyed, I mean, you can go into the other games, but including to a game that hadn't been written yet. and then, which we had already mentioned, Enchanter. And later on when they wrote Enchanter, they had to write in that scene to make it fit. And
weirdly, it's a scene that we talked about that seemed really out of place.
Right.
I remember specifically talking about this Enchanter, and then when I got here, I'm like, wait, didn't we play this game? Didn't I know this scene? Like, yeah. It was weird. Like,
we said at the time that scene was oddly dark for Enchanter. and because this is a darker game. So, you know.
So it's Enchanter. So just so I keep this straight. So Enchanter was going to be Zork 4, but then just went a different way?
Yes. I mean, Enchanter technically happens in the Zork universe, and I don't know at what point they decided this should be its own series, not Zork 4.
Because it is very different. It's all so spell-based, right. And I really liked Enchanter, but it's very different than the Zork games.
Maybe they hadn't written the line of code before they changed their mind and decided it wasn't
Zork 4.
They'd
just written this one horrific scene.
Yeah, yeah. I felt this game had a lot of exploration. It felt like a big map, and I mean, at the beginning of the game, I spent a lot of time mapping or using Encrusted to do the mapping and just looking for new places before I found an obvious puzzle. And like you said, there's not a lot of puzzles. And a lot of these games are linear, like, oh, you can't get into the cellar until you figure out how to get to the cellar, right? Or the dungeon.
But this shouldn't go all over the place. I would have like a few different things that it felt like I could work on any of these, but I wasn't sure, well, which is there only one that I can currently solve? And I wasn't even sure which one I should be working on. I'd be like, okay, at the moment I've got what I think are four different puzzles spread around this map that I guess I could work on. Do I have things that could solve it? Like, I wouldn't even be sure what I could work on. And then eventually I get to the point where I'm like, I've got, I think everything solved and I don't know how to end this game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was very different than some of the other ones. Because you're right, like a lot of the games we've played have been much more linear. Like, you know, you're currently beating your head against like this one particular one. Whereas this is much more open world feeling. And a lot of description, a lot of really evocative description. I really got a sense of the atmosphere of the game in this crumbling former empire. And I really like that. Like, I like a lot of the text. But the map seemed, or the world seemed huge. As I had it mapped out, the map wasn't actually huge.
No. In fact, if you want to know the stats...
I do. Stat me up, baby.
This game had 89 rooms, which is almost exactly the same as Zork 2, which had 86 rooms, but a little bit smaller, then Zork 1, the original Zork, had 110 rooms. So 20 rooms smaller than Zork 1. And
Zork 1 felt like an even bigger map by comparison. I would have guessed that Zork 1 was like twice the size of this.
Yeah, but you know, 20 rooms can be huge. I mean, it's, if there's a puzzle to, you know, like if there's two puzzles in those 20 rooms, then I mean, that could add a lot of time. So yeah, 89 rooms. The vocabulary was of 564 compared to about 700 for Zork 1 and also for Zork 2. So significantly smaller vocabulary.
There were a couple of times where I had to chase a verb. Mm-hmm. But I was able to find the right one on my own. Like, I didn't have to go and seek an answer, which is the worst. Like, when you try to do a thing and then you look it up and the answer is just, oh, you should have used this synonym instead. That is very disheartening. I'd never had that experience, but there were a couple times where I tried a thing, it didn't work. And then I tried it basically again with different phrasing and it did work, which is kind of, you're looking for Infocom to not do that. Like, the thing that Infocom is supposed to be lauded for is it's got the vocabulary you need. It's all about that parser. So I always feel a little let down when the thing I try isn't in there, like the synonym's not in the dictionary.
Right. Yeah, agreed.
And there were just a couple of those, but it's a letdown.
Now, the place where Zork 3 really is smaller is in the number of objects, the number of things that you can interact with. There's 23 objects in Zork 3.
I'm surprised it's that high. Yeah. It felt like way less.
Compared with 60 in Zork 1 and 50 in Zork 2.
And I'd like to apologize for saying less instead of fewer. There's no need to email me. Caught that one myself, folks.
Small in number of objects, which maybe that's part of the thing that makes a game seem small. But I don't know. I didn't think it was small. I felt
there are no small games, only small players.
Yeah, that's me. deaths are new. Sweet. Our new stat, thanks to our friend Nathan. 26 mm-hmm. deaths in Zork 3. Compared to 29 in Zork 1, 51 in Zork 2, and 30 is average across all Infocom games. So
I wouldn't say I encountered them all, but I encountered a bunch of them. I died a bunch of times in this game.
Yeah. And this is one of those games where when you die, it lets you restart. There's a death scene, kind of like happened in Enchanter. Kind of like, oh, you're in one of the netherworld sort of place, and then here you are, start again. So that's kind of nice. Although I don't actually think in my actual game, I managed to get through it without dying, quote unquote, in that game. But the death scene did provide some interesting information, which.
Which I think is a downside, though. Like, there's a bunch of times I learned things by dying that I think I couldn't have learned other than by dying, mm-hmm. and then that let me get farther into the game, and I really don't like the learn by death stuff.
Yeah. Well, get over it, because
it comes away. But still, I don't like that.
Yeah.
There's also, I'm already questioning our death thing, because in this game, I'm trying to be non-spoiler about this, there's time travel.
Yeah.
And so imagine if you had a time machine and if you traveled into the future past 5 billion years, you're going to die instantly because the sun's exploded. So you can go to 5 billion, 5 billion 1, 5 billion 2, 5 billion. Like, you'll have a massive range of numbers that are all. So, and that is the case here too, I think.
Sure.
Like, I did a bunch of experimenting. So in a sense, one of these deaths, I think, is a whole bunch of potential deaths. But you could argue it's the same death. You're just picking a different period, in a sense. I'm just trying to be vague about it. But that exists in this game, too, because I did some experimenting. And it's like, yep, that kills me.
I had a good time with those experiments. It's like, seeing what they...
Because every once in a while, you get an interesting thing, mm-hmm. and it's really rewarding, because you're trying to figure out where you can go. And I'm like, oh, that's neat. But again, you're playing that meta puzzle outside of it. Like, your avatar is dead, and then you say, well, I'm going to, as the player, start again. So I guess in a sense that there's the game going on in here between the dungeon master and your avatar, and then there's the bigger game with Blank and Liebling versus you, the player, and that's going on as well. And this is a game that is kind of aware of both levels.
I think so.
He said, getting all metatextual.
What'd you call me?
You heard me, sir.
I'm not sure I have a whole lot of other stuff to say
It's a difficult game to talk about without being spoilery.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to talk about specific puzzles and stuff like that, and they're all very spoilery, because there's not a lot of puzzles in this game.
That's true. So, I mean, you finished it, you won it, you beat it.
I finished it. In a sense, I won it before I even finished it.
Sure.
Because I got the seven potentials in many fewer moves than when I actually won.
Finally living up to your potential.
Finally.
I finished it as well, with a lot of cheating. This was not my favorite Zork game. It was fine. I did not always enjoy it. There were times when I was into it, like during certain puzzles that I was excited about, and there were other times where I kind of let it go for days because I wasn't feeling it.
Oh, wasn't feeling it. I haven't been as keen on the Zork games as the other games to start with.
Yeah.
Like, so even this, we're like, okay, we're gonna have to do it. Let's go back and so it's more like an obligation to go back and play another Zork game,
right,
versus let's go for the Zork, which is so weird because the Zork games are like the big name in Infocom.
Yeah.
The Zork games, and yet I've been introduced to so many things I like better than Zork when it comes to Infocom stuff. But I don't know that I liked Zork 2 better than Zork 1 is my memory of it, although we played those like a year apart. So, but my memory is Zork 2 was funnier and that I enjoyed it more than Zork 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think I enjoyed Zork 2 more than Zork 3. Though I think the atmosphere is much more evocative in Zork 3. I like a crumbling empire kind of atmosphere.
Who doesn't?
So I enjoyed that. And what I did, and some of the puzzles here are really good and really rewarding and really interesting. And I liked the whole kind of plot that got sprinkled in with the Dungeon Master, but that really felt like a tacked on thing to give it a reason to have an ending.
Yeah.
But I still dug it. So I think I'm kind of ambivalent about whether I like 2 or 3 better than each other. Neither of those would make my top 5 of the games we've played list so far.
Sure.
And I definitely like both of them more than the original Zork. I think that feels clear even though we're playing these things so far apart from each other.
I, without a doubt, liked Zork 2 the best of the three Zork games. I mean, I still think about the Fweep puzzle. I had fun time figuring that out. And there was a puzzle in this game, in Zork 3, that I thought was like, oh, this reminds me of that other one. And it wasn't. I didn't enjoy it as much. It was more, getting through that one was a slog, whereas the other puzzle in Zork 2 was just like, it was fun figuring it out. And this one, I personally did not have that same sort of fun. So, yeah, Zork 3, we played it. I can't give it a...
Zork 3 is also a game we played.
Yeah, I can't really give it a thumbs up.
I think I'm much more positive than you about it then, because I actually liked it. I actually dug it, and I don't think I'm going to come back to it anytime soon. There's so many games. How many of these would I ever come back to? And there's games we played already, I think, that I would return to before I'd return to this.
Yeah.
But if I had to return to a Zork game, I think I'd play this one again versus Zork 2. Even Zork 2, it was funnier, and I do generally like the more humorous games, mm-hmm. but some of the puzzles here I just really enjoyed. I liked the world of this a little more, I think. Hmm. Even though it left me a grumpy Carrington sometimes, because I had to restart this game twice because of things in the game, and it was pencil snapping time. I was upset about that. But now that I know that, I would be able to play it again like I did my last play. I was able to avoid those because I had already learned by those deaths, or learned by those, you know, doing things that made the game unwinnable and not realizing till later. And that is I think a major negative when it comes to a game. But now I know how to avoid that. So kind of, I don't know. I would still give it a thumbs up, but it's with an asterisk.
All right. Let's see what else. I learned the word sallow. I sort of knew what it meant, but I had to look it up. An unhealthy yellow or pale brown color. Sallow.
You never had people describe you that way? I guess I learned it a long time ago.
I just stare at a fluorescent light and I pretend to be okay.
I learned to type aqueduct. I kept misspelling it for some reason. I don't know why. I was like, why am I just like, weirdly, my fingers seemed to jam over typing that easy word. But so that was the only word. I didn't learn it, but I seemed to have difficulty typing.
So can you now have hieroglyphics on your aqueduct?
I would have been an aqueduct that has the word aqueduct on it. Do infidel style. I still think about that every once in a while. I'll see a thing and I'll think, hey, that ladder's got the word ladder on it. It's right out of infidel. It's like, so weird.
Nice.
Okay, so we give it a 1.5 thumbs up.
I guess.
When it, sure. 1.02 out of 2 or so. I don't know. I still dig it. Here, this is always the big question we come down to, though. Would you recommend people play it, and would you recommend people play it as their first Infocom game?
I would recommend that if someone has played 1 and 2, sure, might as well finish it out. I would not recommend this as a first Infocom game.
I would not recommend any of those Zork games as first games, definitely. Yeah. Like, I think just that's just crazy, but crazy. If you were to play them, I don't think it really matters if you play 1 or 2 in whichever order. Like, looking back on them now, I'm like, it's not really contagious. Yeah. You should play Zork 3 third, so it makes sense to be the third game. So if you're going to play them, and I think you should play them, not even just as a completionist. I think that they are worth playing. I have enjoyed them. I think you should play them Zork 1 and then 2 and then 3. But that said, if you were going to say only play 10 Infocom games, I wouldn't include any of the Zork games on that list. I really think at the end of the day, they're not even going to make my top 10, which is so weird. Going into this, I never would have thought that that's the case. Right.
Yeah.
I think many people will disagree with us because the reviews online seem to be very positive about this game. In fact, I came into this assuming I was going to be the negative person, that you were going to love this game, and I was going to be the negative.
I assumed the same thing, that I assumed that you were going to love this game, and I was going to be the negative person, because that has happened.
Usually, I do love these games.
Many times. Yeah,
I do for the most part love these games, and that's why even on this one, I'm like kind of waffling, and I don't want to say bad things about somebody's game, but it's like, I'm too Canadian to review stuff. But I don't think it's any. Like, we've played games that I disliked more than this, and there's some puzzles here that are really rewarding and interesting, and I come to these games for the puzzles. So if you give me those, then it's hard for me to be super negative, and I'm glad that I played it. But that said, it's, you know, there's a lot of things that Infocom has offered that I've enjoyed more, that have puzzles that are just as nice, but stories that are more fun and more humor. I do like more humor in my Infocom games. They write very funny stuff, and I enjoy it.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that's where we stand on this. It's a maybe.
It's a, yeah.
But I definitely have specific things to talk about past this spoiler.
Solid fence. Meh. All right, let's pick our next game, and then we'll have a spoiler fence.
Excellent. And then you'll have a game to play on in the air.
In the air.
A flying Kevin appears playing what? What is the next game going to be, my friend?
I have two that I would like to play, and I would like to give you the option. How about that?
Oh, let's play one left hand, one right hand.
Sure. One with a Dvorak keyboard in the left hand. And accordion, right?
So one will never finish.
I am really interested in playing Spellbreaker, which is the third in the Enchanter series.
Okay. But which is kind of related to the Zork thing, so I can get that right.
And we played the second one a year ago, and I don't know. I'm interested in seeing, as long as we're finishing these out. But also, you just sold me. I'm sorry,
What was the one?
Sorcerer.
Sorcerer? Okay, Enchanter and Sorcerer. And if I recall, I really liked both of these games very much.
Yes.
Okay, so it'd be nice to play a game that we're more likely to really enjoy. Yes. So, okay.
And the other, but you just sold me on funny. I haven't been funny in a while, so maybe we should do Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
Oh, I'd like to play a funny one. I think we should do Leather Goddesses.
Okay, listener, if you want Spellbreaker, press 1 now. If you want Phobos, press 2.
I think we should do Leather Goddesses.
Okay. All right, our next game will be Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
Which I think comes with a Scratch and Sniff card.
I think so, yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yep. And also, I believe that one, you can play it in various modes from Tame to Extreme.
Oh, okay. So are we going to play it in a particular mode?
You can play whatever mode your little heart desires.
Excellent. Right. My little heart is a nasty little thing, so we will see.
Play it. Dirty.
Maybe my heart will grow 3 times that day. Which is, I think, medically a very bad thing to happen, to be honest. So, listener, if your heart grows 3 times, you should seek medical assistance.
Okay. We are here at the spoiler fence.
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to play Zork 3, then stop listening because we are going
to go
away. Come back later, perhaps, after you played it, because we are going to spoil puzzles. We're going to talk about things that will make the game not fun for you. If you are never going to play this game, or you've already played it, then come along with us, pass the spoiler fence, and we will discuss spoilery things.
There are only 5 puzzles. We can probably tell you this whole game.
That's true.
Probably, but in a couple of minutes, we could just simply tell you Zork 3.
It's like that other game that, yeah, there was basically your, yeah, I'm thinking of a thing that I can't say. Anyway, you know what I'm thinking about. Okay.
I know.
Spoiler fence.
Spoiler fence.
Spoiler fence.
Leap. We are now fenced. Boing. Okay, so like I said, lots of those reviews talk about how there's no maze and no timer and no unfair things. Well, the unfair things I talk about, like so much learning by death, like that's crazy unfair. But no timer is silly because that earthquake is 100% a timer because there's things you have to do before it happens, and it seems to happen around random. I think it's not triggered by a thing you do. I think it's triggered randomly by a certain steps.
Move 100 to 150.
Okay, that's the feeling I was getting, yeah, that it seemed to be somewhere in the low three digits of moves.
So there's an area you can't get to until the earthquake happens, fine. And basically a pillar falls down or something, and you can get through a crevice, and you can get to the museum area, fine.
Yeah, the door by the royal hall, whatever.
So what
Flathead's
is the thing,
hall.
And I think I know, but I'm not really sure. What is the thing you have to do before the earthquake?
Okay, so like there's the lake area, yeah, where you can swim across the lake, and if you swim, anything you have, you drop, right? And so you got to not bring any source of fire, or it'll like be ruined. Can't bring the lantern or the torch, but anything else you bring, you simply, it'll drop, and you have to dive down and get it, and yeah, there's that thing in the water, and there's the rock, and you have to dive or sink, pardon me. And that's pretty easy. You just dive in, anything you drop, you swim down and get, and by swimming down, you can find the
amulet.
What's that? The amulet. You get the amulet down there, so you want to swim down at least once to get the amulet. So that brings you to the other side of the shore, and the thing you got to bring across is the Gru repellent, right? Because you're going to go through all those dark areas. Yep. You spray the Gru repellent on, you go through. I like how there's a Gru convention going on south. I thought that was pretty funny. So there's a Gru convention that you avoid with the Gru repellent, and then you get to you find the key that keeps the key of many keys, the key that keeps changing.
Right.
And then you go through like the aqueduct that I learned to spell, and then there's that kind of the water slide basically that takes you to the damp room. But the high arch that you go to get to the water slide collapses when the earthquake comes.
Oh.
So if you haven't gone through there by then, you can't do that.
Oh, I see. All right.
And so you can never go back because the Gru repellent wears off. So once that earthquake is gone, the game is now essentially unwinnable if you haven't already gone and gotten that key.
And there's no way to know. I mean, if you were just... Yeah, there's no... Okay, so I got there to the high... That was the last puzzle I solved.
And as long as you do it by that many moves, I guess you're okay.
No,
but it wasn't.
I did it well after the earthquake. I got to the high arch, and I figured it was some sort of puzzle. And then it didn't even occur to me that the earthquake made that impassable. What I ended up doing, and I did solve this on my own for what it's worth, although I don't think this is the way I'm supposed to
do it. Oh, don't tell me
it's
actually passable because I restarted my whole game because of that.
Okay, good. I optimized my moves. I sprayed the Gru. I think I went into the dark place, sprayed the Gru.
I went to my dark place.
I went to the dark room, sprayed the Gru repellent, got into the key room, got the key, went back to the dark place before the Gru repellent ran out with the key.
Oh, so you could just like whip in, whip out.
Go back through the
light,
drop the key, swim to the bottom, get the key again, and that's how I ended up doing it. And I don't know if you're supposed to be able to, but so I never saw the high arch and the...
Oh, see, because the way I solve this thing is because you take the... You do the Gru repellent on the other side of the lake. So all you've got basically is a Gru repellent. You apply it to yourself. I go through to get to the key room, grab the key, go to the aqueduct, mm-hmm, do this before like move 100 so that the high arch has not collapsed from the earthquake. But before doing this, I go to the Vista thing where you can see the different games, and one of the things it shows you is that damp passage. So I use that to teleport myself and the torch to the damp passage, because the damp passage is also dark, and you're going to take the water slide into that, and you'll be eaten by a Gru if you haven't put a light source there in advance. Wow. So I use the teleporting thing to take me to the damp passage and drop the torch, and then the next move you will be jump back to the teleporting thing. Then I grab the Gru repellent, I swim across the lake, dive down, grab the Gru repellent, apply it to myself, whip through, get the key, pass the high arch, take the water slide down to the damp passage, and I'm safe from the Gru because my torch is there. I pick up my torch and I leave the room. And it was complicated as heck, and it all has to be done before like move 100, and I have to have died many times and learn that you have to do this. Like, it was very frustrating. So I had to figure all that out and then restart my game I assumed that was the only way you could do this. It never occurred to me that maybe I could just really quickly duck in and get the key and duck back out. So maybe I deserved everything I got.
No, I'm sure.
Disheartening.
I am sure that you did it the right way. I'm not sure if I...
It felt right. It felt like I had solved it the way you're supposed to. Like that, because that's why I was teleporting into that one room.
Easier, but also not... interesting, really. Just run in, run out before the timer runs out is not.
But that's the thing, that like if you dick around too much, like I always do, yeah. Then if you wait too long, you can't get past the high arch anymore because the earthquake has made it collapse. But the earthquake at the same time opens up that crack in the door over by the royal area, like the royal hallway, that lets you get to the museum parts. And since this earthquake always happened like when I was kind of still messing around the other areas, like the Land of Shadow or whatever, I didn't realize these changes were happening. So the first time I would get to the High Arch, it was only later I realized, oh, I think this is collapsed. It's a dead end because of the earthquake.
See, I never realized that.
I'm going to go and restart. I'm like, oh, yeah, it is open. Okay, I got to figure out a way to do this quicker. And then because I was doing it quicker, I would move over to the Royal Hall and suddenly like there isn't a crack in the door. I'm like, well, where the heck did that go? Like, it's like, wait, I guess now I have to wait for the earthquake. It's like, oh, it's very frustrating to figure all of that out.
Yeah. So you had mentioned, I had said before the spoiler friends, how I cheated. The tool I used, but you used a new tool to cheat. How did you feel about it?
I used a book.
Yeah.
I used a book called something. I should look it up. I downloaded a PDF of a book and it was excellent to cheat book-wise. I don't remember. In our show notes.
A shortcut through Adventureland.
I think volume 2.
Okay.
Volume 2 was the one including this. So they were just available online. I found a site that had a whole bunch of PDFs of like these old books that were published in the 80s that were, you know, hey, you're playing adventure games, and it would have like 10 different chapters and one chapter per different game. And it would say, if you're playing Cranston Manor, then here's a map and here's some hints and it's that kind of, and so I used, that was my main cheating source for Zork 3. I used this PDF, and so I would look it up in that, and it would have a bit of the map in it. And so I kind of glanced at it. I really liked it in that it was refreshing, like to have an 80s style book of these things. And I would also just I just like the style of it. It was bad in that it's hard to use a source like that and not see more hints than you want to see.
Yes.
Like it's hard to take your eye and go, I'm just going to look at this part of this page. And I'm a weak, weak person. My eyes want us to, are you sure you don't want to look up a bit? Looks like there's more answers.
And yeah, I tried using that book after you mentioned it and before I had found the Z machine, the prism thing. And it was, they were doing things in a different order than I was. So I learned more than I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Especially this game, you can do things in lots of different orders, mm-hmm. except the earthquake bit.
Yeah. I actually have a physical copy of that book, and it's not
look at this guy.
I know.
I have a downloaded cheaty copy, much more in keeping with the way I play these
you're
games.
Still pirating things.
I still am. Pirate. Carrington, still part of the problem 50 years later.
So yeah, it was interesting that we had different ways of solving.
Okay, speaking of which, though, there's the what I think of as a train. Like there's this room that you go into that has mirrors and colored walls and a rod that you can push and rotate.
I had to read that room description like 12 times to get a sense.
It's an incredibly long room description, first of all, like where you read the whole thing and you think, boy, I bet you were hoping for some graphics, because in graphics I would understand this in a heartbeat. It was like, it's like it would be so obvious if I could, and I ended up writing it down, like I sketched it out. So
I want to read a segment of a short segment of it, and this is, it says, you are inside a rectangular box of wood whose structure is rather complicated. No kidding. Four sides and the roof are filled in, and the floor is open. As you face the side opposite the entrance, two short sides of carved and polished wood are to your left and right. The left panel is mahogany, the right pine. The wall you face is red on its left half and black on its right. On the entrance side, the wall is white opposite the red part of the wall it faces, and yellow opposite the black section. The painted walls are at least twice the length of the unpainted ones. The ceiling is painted blue. I swear this is like a quarter of the text on the page. And I was sitting
then it starts
there
to describe this rod in the middle and a groove in the floor that has a circular part in the center. And the rods have two holes in them that have themselves other sticks in them that are different lengths.
And like, a T-bar.
What is happening?
I was lying in bed with my laptop on my lap, like like holding up my hands like against the, like towards the wall, like I'm trying to visualize like this is red and this is yellow or whatever, and my wife comes in, she goes, what are you doing?
Like Tai Chi.
Yeah.
So I guess the way that people solve this thing is you get an invisibility potion and you just walk through it. Is that what you did?
I don't.
Because that's not what I did. I moved this thing.
Oh, here's the thing. I tried that, and it. I tried using the invisibility potion, and you walk through it, and then you get to the end of the corridor, and then you're stuck at that point. I couldn't get any further. I think you have to go in the vehicle box thing.
Oh, okay, because those things that will smash you if they see you on either side.
Using the invisibility potion, you don't have to use it at all during this game. It's a trick.
I didn't use it. It was only afterwards I found out. Like, you can go and you have to know to say hello, sailor, to the person in the boat, which I guess now that I... Actually, not now. But when I was thinking about it later, it is a thing that gets said in, like, other games, so I guess everybody would know to type that.
No,
but I wouldn't have known to type that, and I never did it. I played the game. I'm like, I didn't know to say hello, sailor, to this boat person, and he'll give you an invisibility potion. Like, what the heck?
I was mad about that, and I thought, this is a terrible puzzle, until... I realized it's an Easter egg. It's something you can do, and
Easter egg is a good way to put it. Yeah.
And then you get an invisibility potion, which you don't really need. And the digital antiquarian talks about it, and basically said like it's a fun little Easter egg. And yeah, because if that was an actual way you had to solve a puzzle, it would be terrible.
Well, again, because it started once I heard about that, I thought, well, I've done this whole game, and I not only didn't use an invisibility potion, I didn't even get it. Yeah. So, like, is it the cast base? I'm supposed to get it to get like extra points or something? Like, because this is the kind of game, maybe you could get 8 out of 7, and like, it just seemed really weird. So, and I started getting it, but only because I read about it. I read about it in that little cheat book, and it said to use this. So I'm like, okay. And so, part of my walkthrough, I would do that, and then I would get the invisibility potion, but I wouldn't actually use it for anything because you don't need it for this. You're basically going to rotate this room and then put the little stick in to hold it into the groove and then push it along like a little railroad thing. Right. And the outside are mirrors. And so those little guardians that will smash you, you're essentially invisible to them because they're just seeing their own reflections across from each other. And you kind of use it.
Except you have to do the thing with the pole so that the vehicle doesn't wobble.
It stays in that little groove on the ground.
I didn't like that. I thought that was weird that they noticed the wobble, but not if it...
I think it's because then the reflection will change, and so then they don't see each other because you're trying to make it an exact mirror because they're mirror images of each other. And so it's like when there's lasers and you slide a mirror between it, it bounces the laser right back, so the laser doesn't know what change. That's, I think, what's happening here.
It was so complicated.
Very complicated. Yeah. And I only knew what was going on there because I basically smashed through the wall with my sword, and then I could see what's going on. I'm like, oh, okay, these things rotate, like learn by death. And I guess so that was a lot of learning by death by that puzzle.
Yeah.
So there's the maze, which is a maze because there's this wall moving puzzle. I guess that everyone calls it the royal puzzle.
Right.
That basically there's these two sorts of walls, some of which you can move and some of which you can't, and it's totally a mapping puzzle. And I figured out the concept of it, and that there's this one pillar, two pillars really, that have ladders on the side of them, and you got to position one of those pillars. It's relatively easy to push things around to get the thing you need. Like, you get this book that has text that changes in it, and you need that book. So it's easy to get in and push the pillar and get to that book. The hard part is pushing everything back so that you can get back out of this thing, because you got to push one of the pillars up adjacent to the hole you entered in, because you come in kind of from the ceiling. And if you can position the pillar that has the ladder on its west side just one square to the east of where you came in, you can use that ladder to climb up and get out. And that's the hard part, is pushing everything back. And in the end, I was just like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to use a walkthrough. I got the concept, and I was like, but I don't want to spend 5 days figuring out these steps.
Exactly.
And I just read the steps, and like, I've got everything I need out of this puzzle. Once I've solved it mentally, I just don't know the specific steps. The rest of it won't be fun to brute force it. So I just read the steps and I pushed them around. Mm-hmm. Just push this one, push this, go south, push there. And it just solved the puzzle for me.
I see. This is the one I thought was going to be like the puzzle in Zork 2, where there's the 3D maze.
The 3D maze was great. The 3D maze was way better than this, where you're that back flying thing.
And this,
I shouldn't say what that is.
Yeah. This wasn't like that. So I got through this puzzle once I mapped it out enough. There's a book in there. I got the book, and then I got to, there's a door that will only open up if you give it a treasure, if you give it a sacrifice. And I gave the book to it, and it opened up, and I got out of the maze, and that was a success. And I learned later that that is not the optimal way. That's not like the preferred way to solve the puzzle. The way that the preferred way is to move the ladders around. And at that point, I was like you. I was just like, you know what? I understand this in concept. I have mapped it pretty well. I'm bored with this. And then looked it up and just found out how to do it the optimal way by moving the ladders. And yeah, it felt like that. What's that game?
It's a sliding block number
puzzle.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of it. Like, there's a game in NetHack where you have to move the boulders around, and yeah. and I don't. That's not my kind of thing. I don't. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about the good puzzle though.
Okay, the best puzzle is the time machine puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think like it's super fun. So you find this time machine. You find really three machines, one of which is a time machine, and it's got a little dial and a button, and you set the dial to the time you want. It's Back to the Future type stuff. Set your year and press the button, and off you go. And it's super fun because you go back too far, you go into rock because the room's not there. You go back a little bit and not quite far enough, the guards will be there and they just instantly kill you. But you can go back slightly farther and you'll get the guards outside. And you can listen to them talk about like their wages and that they're building that dam. So you kind of move backwards into Zork 2 time. And it's super fun. And the tricky thing about it, like the thing that took me literally days to realize, because I'm doing this puzzle, I'm moving into the future, I'm moving the past. I'm like, why can't I solve this? Because you're trying to go back in like, essentially, you're always trying to get these puzzles, get treasures, but I'm like, what do I do with this thing? I just keep dying, and it doesn't occur to me that I could maybe push this to a different room and
move
then
the time
go back
machine
in time.
To a different room.
And I can't. I did solve it though. I saw this one, but it took me like a whole week of just doing times and thinking about it to finally be like, oh, or I could, because it doesn't move in space, it just moves in time. Why don't I push it to where I want it to be and then move in time? Oh, that's like 5 days of thinking for that one sentence.
Man, you're a better man than me, because I did not think to move it, and I kept going to the different time and then try to exit the room and walk to the, you know, two rooms away to where I wanted to be, but there was guards in the way, or then the guards left, but then they locked all the doors, and I spent 5 days on that too, but I didn't make the mental leap of trying
just
to
just push south, push east.
Stupidly too, I might have tried testing moving one of the other machines, and they are immobile. Oh. So I think I just did the stupid thing. Oh, you can't move the machines. When in truth, this you couldn't move the black machine, but the gold machine is mobile. I love the idea of there being an inoperative time machine in a museum that they didn't know was an actual time machine,
which is great. And then like once I got it moving, I'm like, okay, but you can't carry anything. Like, how do I move? And that was the other thing. And like, it took me forever to realize, well, you can put things. Well, first I realized you can put things on the seat, like beside you, and they will go back and not like disappear like your inventory does. And things move differently if you're in the jewel room versus the technology room. But it was forever to realize you could put stuff under that seat. But then, of course, the knife and the scepter, they don't fit under the seat. So I'm like, oh, that must be wrong. And then I realized, wait, the ring will fit under the seat. But it was weeks to solve a single puzzle. I felt like so dumb. I'm like, how can this be a two-step puzzle that takes me 2 weeks to solve?
And I had accidentally spoiled myself on the fact that you could only take the ring and that went under the seat. So, but I felt
that that's good though.
I like the idea of the puzzle, but I felt like the part where you can only take one of the three treasures.
Exactly, because I kept thinking I wasn't finished yet.
Very unZork like.
And exactly, why show me these other things? Yeah,
it's like when you're playing Enchanter, that series, you know. That game is not about collecting all the treasures. There might be treasures there. Don't worry about them. They're not for you. When you're playing a Zork game, it's collect the treasures. And there are other treasures that you've gotten at this game. You've gotten the amulet, and maybe you've gotten the ring at this point and stuff. So obviously you're after stuff. So you're just going to leave the scepter behind and be happy with it? It's not Zork-like, and it felt out of place.
But I think, boy, I have thought about this because it really bugged me. Because even after solving it then, after figuring out, okay, here's how I get the ring back, I put it under there, I spent forever trying to solve, well, how do you then do the knife and the scepter? Because clearly there must be ways to get those. I just haven't figured out yet. But no, you don't need to. They're just they're just there for no reason. And I only figured that out by then looking up answers, and it turns out, well, there is no answer. You don't need those. You got what you need. You're good. Really, in fact, the ring was the last thing I needed to be able to then go, because I'd gone to the Dungeon Master already, we were talking about it, and was just told I wasn't ready yet, and he gave me the spell to zap myself back out and said, come back when you're ready, essentially. And what I needed was this ring. That was the last thing I needed. But I didn't know that. I assumed, well, I must be able to get this jeweled knife. There must be a way to, like, can you cut open the seat and put it in that? Do I stab myself with it and maybe I can come back in the future quicker than I'll die? Like what's the way I can bring this thing? I was trying everything, man.
Like an Infocom puzzle's never made you want to stab yourself before.
Well, the thing is, I think what's going on here is, in the same way that with the atmosphere and with a lot of things, this game is trying to subvert expectations in the nature of the humor and the nature of the puzzles and the nature of the score and the nature of so many things. And I guess this goes along with that. Like, it's going to show you some puzzles, but you don't need them all. You just need the one. But that's not good enough. Show me treasures and I don't need them. That's fine. Like you said, an enchanter. Don't worry your pointy little head about that, or your pointy little hat about that. It's all fine. You don't need the treasures. But it's still a Zork game. I still am collecting some treasures. Like, I still need the ring. I still need other things. I need the hood and the cloak and all this other stuff. I still need this key of many keys, or whatever the heck it was called. Mm-hmm. So I did not like the fact that there's three treasures there, one of which you can solve in a fancy way to get out, but the other two, just, you know, let them go and you won't need it. That seemed incomplete. It really bugged me. Don't put the other treasures there.
Yeah.
That bothered me. But at the same time, I love the puzzle.
Yeah, if it had just been a ring, the royal ring or something, that would have been fine.
It would have been totally fine, and I would have felt so good about solving the puzzle and fitting it under that seat, which is kind of weird that the seat works, but you got to stick it. And I got it later. Like, I thought about it later. I was like, it's because I'm putting it tucked under there, that robot thing that goes around just simply never, no one sees the ring is tucked under there. That's why it can come to the future, because if you have something on the chair or whatever, it's going to disappear because it's going to get spotted as this thing travels forward in time, because it just literally just sitting there traveling forward at 1 second per second, and the treasures get spotted, but tucked under the chair, it just never gets noticed. So it made sense as a solution, but it bothered me that there was other treasures. They just never have showed them. So, but I love the puzzle though. I love the time travel thing. It was super fun. I liked even getting killed by it. Like, I thought it was neat. It was a neat puzzle.
Yeah. Agreed.
So what other puzzles were there? We talked about it briefly. There's that thing that the time travel, what are they called? The scenic vista, which is weirdly named
first. I
liked
that.
I totally liked it. Did you go into Zork 2, go into Zork 4.
I didn't figure out on my own that if you touch it, you go to the thing you're seeing.
Me neither. In fact, I tried to do that. Like, it showed, and I think I said something like, enter table, enter room, and it doesn't work. You just got to touch the table.
I didn't think of it. I saw it like, oh, there's scenes. Maybe this is something I need to know for later on in the game or something. And some of it seemed a little bit familiar. And I had to cheat to find out that you could touch it. Once I knew to touch it, then I was off to the races. You know, I could figure out stuff.
Human sacrifice.
Right. Yeah.
And then I kept thinking, maybe I can solve this human sacrifice. In Enchanter, you just, like, if you go to the scene, you die. But then you kind of get rid of, like, it's Enchanter stuff, which we don't want to spoil here. But I was thinking, well, here, there must be a way to get past the scene. And no, it's just, you know, don't go there.
Yeah, I think it's insta-death, too. So it was clear to me that you can't get past the scene.
I was thinking, like, maybe if I go there and I'm wearing something different, or I've got my sword, I've got, like, is there a way to go there so that you survive this? But no, it's just, you go there to die. It's just kind of funny that you're, here's a glimpse into Zork 4.
Right. You want to talk, this is the end game puzzle. Should we get to that?
Oh, sure. Right, of course. Yeah, that's like the long hallway in a sense.
Yeah, so we've gone down the long hallway, and here's the dungeon master. And
we've done that mirror box thing to sneak past the guardians.
And he takes you to this area where there's some rooms, and there's a prison cell, and there's a parapet, and there's a machine, and he's following you around, and he's just like, I want you, he basically says, like, I want you to win this game. There's one more thing you have to do. Like, I'm here to help. I'll do what you say.
But I'm here to help, but I'm not really going to, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm going to just watch you and see if you can solve it.
Right. And at that point, this is the time, one of the times in the game where I'm just like, I got no idea. And I figured it out, but I stood around for a while with my finger somewhere going just like, I don't know. I can't. What am I supposed to do here? And
because you can tell him to do things. Yes. You can say, follow me.
Oh, I tried telling him to do all sorts of weird things.
Because there's these buttons, like this dial you can turn to like 8 positions, and you can press the button and your sword glows. So, you know, some sort of magic is happening.
Oh, my sword was long gone by then.
Your sword was long gone by then?
I didn't think I needed it anymore, so I abandoned it.
I'm always thinking I need everything always.
Interesting. No, you were getting feedback that I wasn't. Because I think I read somewhere that like after some point you don't need the sword anymore. So I just threw it in the lake. And, you know,
it's like the lantern. Like you basically use it right near the beginning, and they're like, yeah, you won't need that again. But like, man, it's my lantern. I'm taking this lantern to the grave, baby.
Yeah, so I figured out, Oh! You changed the numbers and this the cell,
like the one cell 4 suddenly has a door out of
right.
nowhere.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Hey, where'd that come from?
The prison cell changed that, and so cell 4 seemed to be special, and there was a door, but I couldn't open the door, and I was just like, oh, and smart me, I'm just like, oh, this must use the Froboz Co. magic room spinner, and so then it.
Oh, that's back on the other machine.
Yeah. Yeah, I must use the later. I don't know. So
wait. So you try to push that from the technology museum?
No. I was just like.
I was like, wow. I just saw that
using,
one.
This is the technology that this fictional thing is using. Anyway, so there's this door, and then I couldn't. I got into the door, but basically the end of is the you can't open the door until the room is. The dial is back to its original setting to 8, I think.
Right. So you have to tell the dungeon master to do it.
It was really not clear to me that was how the other part. You know, I got into room 4. I was in there. I was ready to use the key, and then you have to have the dungeon master reset the dial to its original setting. I had to cheat on that. I felt that was. I don't know. I didn't feel like there was enough clues to...
Me too. And I was disappointed because it's the end game and I basically had to read how to solve it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then like you solve it and I guess the idea is as this thing, as you push, you turn the dial and you push the button, it moves the rooms like physically magics them in and up. And so you're really like swapping these rooms. So the idea is you're going to get in the one room into 4, have the dungeon master turn the dial and it'll swap you back down to where the treasury is. And then he presses the button and you can use the key to unlock it and go in. And that's essentially what you got to do. Like you get in the room and even the dungeon master is a couple of squares away, he can hear you. So you can just... give him commands even though he's not with you. So you tell him to wait by the dial and you go in. But the problem is I ended up having to read that solution. It basically told me, here's what to do. Go in the room, tell the dungeon master to do this, open the key and you'll win.
Yeah.
And that's really, it's really disappointing because after all this work and after all the effort and solving the one puzzle like on my own and feeling really proud of that, mm-hmm. then... But you win this game by having like solving this thing, like telling the dungeon master to do these things, and then the dungeon master says, "Great, you've done it. You've solved all the stuff. You're awesome. You're the new dungeon master." But it undercuts my feeling of like joy because I just solved it by using a walkthrough, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And this was
right at the very last thing.
This could have been a fair puzzle if there was more clues to the fact. As to why the key wouldn't go into the bronze door at the end or something, you know, but...
I think so, too. There would have been a way to do this, I think, in a way that I could solve it. Yes. And I felt like maybe I could have, but I spent a lot of time trying to solve stuff without looking. And finally, in this puzzle, I just had to look up the answer. And then it was really disappointing that I, essentially, after playing 3 games, God knows how many... dozens and dozens and dozens of hours playing these things, I win by looking up a couple of sentences and it goes, oh, therefore you're the greatest and you've won. I'm like, oh, I'm not really actually that great.
Nothing great. Yeah, it was a ending that it takes the wind out of the
scene. Yeah, so that was disappointing.
For sure. And in the end, here's the super spoilery bit. It was kind of leading up to that. Maybe it was starting to be obvious, but the dungeon master is you. He's an old version of you. And then he's like, okay, I'm on to other things now. Laters. And he zaps you and he makes you an old grizzled guy. And he's like, oh, here's all the treasure. You've got all the treasure in the world. And now here, and there you go. And it felt to me, and I realized that I'm going out of time here. This felt to me like a Trinity ending. I don't even know if I should say that. because we're it felt to me like we can maybe edit this. It felt to me like a Trinity ending, but Trinity did it better.
The thing is, I don't think that gives away a spoiler thing on Trinity. I think that's fine to leave in. Okay. But it did, and it was like a bit of a bummer thing, and also it felt weird in that in this game, the Dungeon Master is coming along the ride. Like you encounter the person with the hood and the cloak, and you fight with the sword, and if you can, you know, best him, but then instead of killing him, you remove his hood, which I thought was fair because I knew to do that because every time he killed me, which was frequently, he would go to take off his hood and I would die before I could see the face underneath. So it made me curious. And so I got to the point where I could kill him.
And if you do kill him, he looks at you like sadly or like
sadly, I've clearly done a wrong thing. Exactly. Cause I did go back and kill him and see what happened. So you take off the hood and it reveals like, your face and it's you, and then changed old and then disappears and leaves you the hood and the cloak. So, and then there's a time where there's the treasure chest and you go to take it and he yells down, hey, you know, tie this rope to it and I'll pull it up, and then you wait and I'll pull you up later. And you, if you do wait properly, you don't sneak up there and he gets disappointed, then you, and he's going through the treasures that are all now his, and he gives you just the one staff and kind of giving you the thing you need. So in this game, you do encounter this dungeon master who's kind of helping you, kind of showing you visions of what you need, but that's just in this game, the third of the three. And it's supposed to be like as if this has been happening all along, like you're the same person from one and two, but there isn't really that continuity. And while in this game you can jump back to the Gru repellent room in Zork 2, like that's where you get the Gru repellent here, is you jump into the other game. That's really cool. And but it doesn't make sense really, because this old dude wasn't there in one and two. Like, it wasn't the case that there's always been this hooded figure, and now it's finally revealed who it is. It's like they spring Darth Vader on you, but only in Return of the Jedi. And so I'm like, this dude was never here before. So that was also a little weird, I think. I kind of wish it had been, like, all along there'd always been this weird hooded figure, and you never knew who it was, and then it gets revealed that it's actually, like, in a sense, weirdly you.
I'm not sure. Okay, I feel like, okay, if the Avatar plays games 1 and 2 and 3. And then other stuff happens. A lot of other stuff happens. He gets rich. He uses the treasure. He you know, conquers worlds. He gets old and grizzled. Then he comes back to Zork 3 to meet you at the end.
Oh, so, okay, so the Dungeon Master in this one is who you were in 1 and 2, but you're playing a different character this time.
No. Okay. I'm just saying you're a much younger version of the Dungeon Master, where he did 1, 2, and 3, and then he did other stuff that you haven't done yet.
Right, that's why he's grizzled and old, and that's another weird thing. He's grizzled and old, and kind of happy to be done with this. And it's so weird because that seems to be a reflection of what Mark Blank was thinking. Like, there's this crumbling empire, and it's like, oh, I'm so tired of this. I'm so tired of the original. Let's just make it 7 points. I got a couple of puzzles. That's all we got, and thank God you've released me from this hellhole. Wow, dude, it's the fifth game.
you got miles to go before you sleep, dude.
Totally.
Yeah,
I don't know. And it's also weird that if this is like I found it a little strange. Like I thought it was supposed to be another character was the Dungeon Master all along, and you were supposed to be the character who just did 1, 2, and 3. Because you start this game basically tumbling down the stairs from the end of the last game. You're picking up right at where you left off. So I thought it was supposed to be the same character all the way through. But it seemed weird that you were so super into treasure collecting in the beginning, and the Dungeon Master had nothing to do with you. And now suddenly the Dungeon Master is like, no, you're the one, you and me, let's do this.
Right.
Seems a little
disjointed. Yeah, in this game, you're not into treasure collecting. What has changed from game 2 when you were really into treasure collecting?
But I was really into treasure collecting, and I left them all in. Oh, you know what? And I did things in Zork 1 that it's not spoilery in case you haven't listened to that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's all strange. It makes it sound more negative than I mean it to be, though.
Exactly as negative as I mean it to be. This game is out of character for the trilogy.
It does feel very much so. It feels like it was written by like a different person who came in and said, like, you know, here's what I think Zork should be instead, versus, you know, we're getting the band back together.
Yeah.
But I liked some of the puzzles, and that time travel puzzle was sweet, awesome. I really liked that the whole concept of this Vista thing where I can spin it to a certain thing and I can see a room in the previous game that has an object I need. Like, I'm going to dip back into Zork 2 and grab the Gru repellent. That's awesome. Although it would have been better they were taking this all from the original, or not all of it. They're taking a bunch of this from the original Zork game, dungeon, whatever. And I guess only some of these puzzles are from that, but it's really too bad that from the very beginning, they should have planned that in Zork 3, there'll be a thing where you can nip back into Zork 1 and 2 and take stuff or make changes. Because then those could have been incorporated into those games in a mysterious way that no one knew was going on. Like you look into a room and there's three cans of Zork repellent and you need one. And you go in the room and suddenly one of them disappears and it never explains why. And you grab one. And then later when you get to this room, you'd see it and go back and take one and it would explain what happened. And they're like, that would have been so amazing if this game
play the long
did
game.
Things that made sense of stuff in 1 and 2. And it doesn't really. So I'm not asking too much of it, but that would have been brilliant and lovely. And I wish they had played that long game.
Yeah.
I'm all about the long con.
Yeah. I'm curious as to whether people's opinions about whether I cheated the aqueduct puzzle by doing it the way I did it.
No, I think you're just better than the rest of us.
Maybe. I don't know. By just sneaking in and out on the same can of goose spray. Maybe it's a alternate solution that's acceptable. Or maybe I'm the first person in history to do
that. Maybe. I think you are. Clearly are. First person ever in history to do that. Well done, you.
Right, yeah. All right, anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah,
that's a game that we played.
It's a game that we played. I'm more positive on than you are. No one should play it for the first game. If you're going to play all Zorks, then you might as well play Zork 3, but now you know how everything ends. So we've ruined the ending for you the way the spoilers ruined the ending for us.
True.
Indeed. Way to go. There you go. And that brings us to the end of this lovely... I'm less taken on you. But you know what? People can write in and tell us why they love it, because I think everyone else loves this game. So I think we are in the minority.
Yeah, we are wrong. We are willing to be wrong, and you can be like Carrington and be wrong.
You can be like both of us and be wrong, I guess, this time. But there you go. But next time we are going to play Leather Goddesses of Phobos, which has a scratch and sniff and I think is a dirty game. So we've just played Dungeon Master, now we play a dirty game.
Great.
Ooh. And so anyway, that brings us to the end of this game, or the end of this show, the end of this episode. That's it. It brings us to the end of something. I am recently traveled.
End of my patience with you, Carrington.
And this has been Eaten by a Groove, the Infocom podcast. If you want, you can send us feedback and tell us why we are wrong about this game. And you can email that to Groove, G-R-U-E, at monsterfeet.com, or hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz. I am at Carrington. And we will
Apparently you can send us postcards too, but
apparently, good luck even better, you can send us postcards. Ye old-fashioned postcards. I expect a telegram any minute. So we will gladly, what will we gladly do? We will gladly lend you our waterproof Groove repellent if you give us a nice review in iTunes, which helps other people find the podcast, and the show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com, including links to those PDFs if you want to cheat the way I cheated. Cheater. And thanks to MC Frontalot for getting down with his bad self and letting us use his song as our theme tune. And we will see you next time for Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
And you too, Kevin. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Groove.
Okay, well, we could probably record when you get back then.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it ends up being a quick, I could be wrong. It might be filled with really difficult erotic puzzles, but
maybe.
I think it's mostly.
Maybe because of my inexperience, I won't be able to solve them.
Oh. You can ask Rachel if you have any questions.
That's Rachel. What does this mean? She's like, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. I can't tell you that other one. You also have got one completely wrong. So maybe next time we can talk about all the words that I learned.